Okay. Welcome to the September 24th, 2025 San Juan Island School District Board of Directors monthly meeting. We do have a quorum present, minus TJ, who is excused. I call this meeting to order at 5 o'clock. Please stand and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. First order of business is the approval of the agenda. Any questions or change requests? Did I have a motion to approve the agenda?
I move to approve the agenda.
Melanie moved.
Second.
John seconded. Any discussion, further discussion?
I love the agenda.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Unanimous. Public comment. Before we start, I'll reiterate our longstanding public comment rules. They may pertain to items on or off the agenda, but may not be critical if pertaining to the performance of an employee. Please refer those comments directly to the superintendent as per district policy. Comments will be 2 minutes and may be limited at discretion of board chair. Comments will be heard, but no response will be made at this time. Reminder, topics raised in public comment are not up for discussion. This meeting is not an open public forum, which means a place, a meeting, or medium where ideas and views on a particular issue can be exchanged. This is a meeting for the board of directors to meet in public to discuss school district business in public, but amongst ourselves. Thank you. And Carrie, you wanted to say something. This is Carrie Brooks, who was on the board, and she was also on town council.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I look a lot different.
We all do.
The mill, you know. So yeah, I used to work at Islanders Bank for 30 years. I was on town council 10 years and the school board back in the 90s for 4 years and several county board positions and the housing bank. I was the chair when it actually changed over from one something or other into the housing bank. And so I've done a lot of things that are interesting in this community. And I love this community. I feel like a mama to this community. I always have. I'm 75 years old now. And I am so excited to still be here and be in love with this community and that they still love me. That's what I really appreciate. But I am... There's a picture up there that I just saw that just wins my heart. The one with the girl standing like that. That's my heart right now. And then this sign, it says, let's work together to make a difference. And we have strength in our unity. And I am seeing something going on right now that I have to talk to you about. I'm also a pastor's wife, have been for 55 years in December. And we've been here 38 years in Friday Harbor. And I see something going on with our young people that I am thrilled to death with. This is what they're doing. They're reaching out. They said, we want more. We want something more in life. We want to be able to be successful in life. We want to learn about business. We want to learn about how to make our homes happier, how to have a good marriage, those type of things. And with the events that have happened in the last couple of weeks, it now, this morning, I heard that there are 112,000 applications to high schools for permits for a club for kids to get together that have the same type of feeling. And those clubs are really helping kids and people. They have a club from 14 to 18. Then there's a club for college. And then there are ones for young adults and so on. But I just have a feeling that it's going to work out. I just feel in my heart. And with the young people I work with, I've now been teaching music to kids in the community for quite a while since I retired. And they're just precious. They're wonderful. And I just think that there's something going on in their hearts right now. They want more. And I've watched the movement called Turning Point for about 10 years. And Been very impressed with some of the things that they give out, especially in business. It's really interesting, the business model that they have, and mission statements and so on that are in there, teaching how to do things right. And I'm very impressed with it. And I would hope that if the students come to you and say, we'd like to have permission for this club, that you would really listen and just take some advice from somebody who's been around this community. I've been around, and I am very in, I trust this organization quite a bit. I would like us to do what the Turning Point theme is. Let's talk together. Let's be in unity. Let's not push each other aside, but let's love each other instead. And that's where my heart is, and that's where I think the kids' hearts are today. And I'm really excited about what I see. And I'm involved with youth and things around too. So, and I know you will be. I know you will be. I trust the school board. I was on it enough, and a lot of times the votes, just like in town council, were 4-1, 4-1, and I was the one. But they always listened. And I just appreciate that so much. So I just want to say thank you, and thank you for this opportunity, and I'll be back. So thank you.
Thank you.
Well, can I know we don't need to respond. Can I respond
Yeah.
to that? So, Carrie, so thank you for talking to us. I wanted to tell you, I appreciate you saying one thing in particular and all of that. Student driven. That is the key to clubs. It's not gonna, as far as allowing it or not allowing it, that's really not the issue right now. The idea is every club is through the ASB process. And so that's really the key on any of these. So I just want to tell you I appreciate that, and I hope you can also continue to send that message out to whoever you might be talking to. That is what drives clubs in a high school setting, no matter what it is, no matter what it is. Well, it's student initiated. It's not adult initiated. That's one of the key things for clubs to be successful. No club gets a privilege over another. They just don't. But it's got to be something that students are actively in the have the purpose for initiation. And so I appreciate saying that. I just want to say to you, I hope that that message also goes out, right? Because I know, and I say that bluntly because I'm afraid to say anything. I know there would be a lot of adults that would love to see this organization, but it's got to be something that our students are definitely in initiating.
And I kind of want to put Andrea on the spot. Can you give us an idea of some of the clubs that that are active already now?
Oh, absolutely. I'm looking at the website today, and I feel like we have about 20 of them. I don't know if we can pull them up or not. So you go to the website. I could start going through the list, though, of some of them, like some of them are volunteer-based. Club, National Society, Volunteer and Merit-based. We have a film club, we have Latinx club, we have Eco club, so that's more about the environment. We have a technology student association.
There's even a mental health club.
I have a little question. So, do students bring an idea of a club to someone and then they can form that club based on a process? Is that how that's done?
Probably and they are part of our then they can choose to operate again. That's never existed before. They have to be part of that club. They have to find members. They have to find space to meet, and library to supervise. And then they have to like
Gain some
get to
momentum and try, yeah.
that.
So,
Yeah. Sometimes clubs start and then don't like it.
yeah, these don't take off.
Mom plan right now. No.
Don't go. So, without put you on the spot. I mean, how many proposed clubs have been would be turned down because of install? Okay, so none. So that's okay.
Yeah, if it's gender incident, they follow all the steps.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Sorry to put you on the spot.
I'm sorry about that.
I'm a random question. So. Okay, moving on. We have Fred.
Oh, I spoke to clubs. Let's see. I find it hard to believe that we're 4 weeks in. I think that's right. Not only about 4 weeks, at least 4 weeks in. It goes so fast anymore. And it seems like a good start. There's always a couple of bumps here or there as we work through it, but I think all the principals would tell you it's been a pretty good start. On a whole different side, the only part that hasn't been fun is the facilities issues, which I've kept you abreast of, but we've got to make sure we get the heat pumps. We did get some, I didn't tell Jose, we did get some response from the state today. They are taking a good look at supporting the cost of the pumps in the elementary school, and that would be a big plus if we can get that. We're doing it no matter what. We don't have a choice. If we want heat in the winter, we've got to have those heat pumps. So money's got to come from somewhere, but they, what he sent back, I didn't even realize this, but with he being Scott Black, who runs this part of the grants in, at OSCE, what he sent back to me was the Emergency Repair Act grant, Emergency Repair Grant. It's not listed on the system on iGrants. I didn't know that. I've been searching all over for it, but what he sent back was that. So it looks like we have a good shot at it, and we're going to keep crossing our fingers because we'd like to have that $150,000 covered. It's amazing how much things cost. Other than that, I think I'll just speak when I get to the school improvement plans on my part. It's just been a pretty good start.
Awesome.
Thank you. So we don't have an ASB rep yet today, so she won't be here, I guess. We'll move on to the state assessment reports. I have that right?
Yeah.
Okay. Is that you?
Yeah.
Okay.
I was saying if she could. So can you enlarge that a little bit? I think what is interesting, and before she starts scrolling down, is that what this is something that you guys had asked for before was to show you the ELA and math scores in comparison to the state. And I'm not going to go through each one of them, but you can see in most all cases that we have done better than the state. I think there's only one that I saw. But if you did ask for a comparison between the state, and we're still performing above the state. We're not where we want to be, of course, but we're still doing well. And then, of course, the principal is going to talk tonight about some of the scores and how that, what they're seeing with their school improvement plans. But we are getting growth, and that's what's important to us. But again, we're seeing it above the state, and we can just see even in the seventh grade that orange above the green for the most part. And of course, Rod will point out that there was some extreme growth in some of those there that happened in eighth grade. Yeah. And if there isn't growth, then we'll be able to explain what we think is happening. What I did like on this, so you guys can look at this on your own, is you kind of get a cohort look. Well, it's not even cohort. Those are all eighth grade scores from 21, aren't they? So it's not cohort. And I encourage you to go in and take a look because you can see, like, the class of 29, what they've done over the course of time. And the example is that you can take that class of 29 and see the ELA is at 72.9, when at one time back and forth they were at, 52.7? So there is good growth through this. And that's what we want. We want them to grow even more. Now we have some other issues with scores, correct? And we gotta talk about that. But there is continued improvement. Anything else that I'm missing on this? Any questions?
No. So moving on to section 3.02, review of the SIPs.
Okay, so what I've asked each person to do is that what we did is create this nice little slideshow. They each get a couple of minutes and talk about the review of the SIP plan from 24-25. They put the goal and the results, and it'd be a brief synopsis of what they see and how that might inform what we're doing on the new SIP for the October. So we'll begin. I believe it goes by school. So Holly is up first and needs to have that nice little mic.
We have had our social emotional goal and then our academic goal. Social emotional is up first?
No, I don't know what's
second. Oh, I have the clicker. I wasn't looking at you to click. I was just looking around. Okay. No. So we have our academic goal that was centered around our multilingual learners, because we were it was kind of an expectation from the state for a couple of years there that we had that, and then we, although we grew enough to be recognized and come out of the status where we absolutely had to have the goal, we kept with it another year. So by May of 2025, our goal was that in reading and math, but it's bold in reading because this is just showing reading, our scores at Friday Harbor Elementary School from multilingual learners would meet a grade level average or show more than 1 year's growth, according to the MAP student achievement norms. So it kind of shows two different things. This part shows that 45.5% of our ML students were at grade level or made a year's growth. And that was following the same cohort over the last 3 years. And then the graph shows in comparison to the national growth average. So it's a little bit different than showing the percentage, but I wanted to make sure to include how many of our students, our ML students, actually did make that goal. And we know that when English language learners are in elementary school, they're learning language and they're learning academics, so it takes time. But we were excited about the growth, and I don't have the mid-year scores on here, but I did show those in May, and it was really exciting to see the growth that they had made from May, or it was actually from February, the scores that I showed in May, but from February to June. So
this is our ML kids.
Mm-hmm. Not every single ML kid, because we stuck with the same cohort
okay.
of students to show.
Okay, because is it against the national everybody reading?
So yes, when you look up, so we have 22 or 2024 and 2025, and then it's the MAP reading growth average, national reading growth average.
Okay.
MAP scores, because we were using MAP scores for this.
Okay.
So the scores on the right hand side are all kids at FABS. Is that correct, or only multilingual?
Only multilingual. So, yes. So the blue are from 2024, the growth from 23 to 24. And then the orange is from 24 to 25. So the second graders were kindergartners when we started this. That makes sense. And then the national growth average, reading growth average for MAP scores is in yellow. Okay. And then for math, same goal, but these are the math scores. So we had 57.5% of ML students at grade level in May. Again, it shows the growth from 23 to 24, 24 to 25, and then the national growth average.
About how many kids are we talking about?
In this group, mm-hmm. 60.
Okay.
60, yeah. But we had some kids join our school in between. Mm-hmm. Not really any leave, though. So we were able to really follow that specific group of kids. Any questions about those academic goals? And then we have our social emotional goal. And you saw a lot of presentations last year from the kids too about the zones of regulation. So that was what we really focused on for this. It was being able to identify their feeling and then be able to know 2 to 3 strategies to help themselves be calm and ready to learn using the zones of regulation. So our goal was that 95% of students by the end of the year would be able to identify their feelings and name their strategies. And we ended up with 93.8, so really close. And this one over here just shows that if they could identify their feeling, that's the first step in knowing how to regulate your emotions, is to be able to identify the feeling that you're having. So you can see that they're, if you just focus on not yet, we went from 26, that big yellow chunk, to that little pie piece of 6, just over 6% that didn't feel like they could yet identify their feelings. So we're going to keep going with the zones of regulation. I don't think this will be the focus of a goal, but we will have a social emotional goal again. And then this was the being able to name 2 to 3 strategies. So also didn't quite make 95%, but 90%-ish could name 2 to 3. So yeah, lots of practice with that. Really fun to see how often the students are using the zones of regulation. And there were kindergartners that every day they walked in and they picked their zone. There's a little, every classroom has a little chart, like a little thermometer kind of thing. And then sometime during the day, they would get up and they'd go back there and they would change it. Like they just were like, I'm noticing that they were feeling different, and they would go over and make an adjustment based off of how they were feeling. So they're definitely learning early how to identify their feeling and work with that and other strategies. A drink of water, a break, talking to someone that they need to talk to, all those good strategies. Mm-hmm. As far as that, what we talked about just today with our goals, and looking at the slide that we were before with the compared to the state, we're really focusing on math this year. So it's looking like we're going to write an academic math goal. Won't be specific to ML, but we'll keep all of our ML action steps that we took last year in place as well, because that's made a big difference for everybody. But mm-hmm. It's looking like math's our way to go. Thank you. Any questions? Okay.
Thank you.
So we had 2 goals also at the middle school. Our first one was an academic goal, and the second one was our culture. A look at how our school feels to most people, and we've done a couple of prolonged surveys over the years that we've done on that work. But we'll start with the academic. We were pretty proud of the results, but unfortunately, I get a little nervous talking about the test scores only because there's so much more going on. But academically, what was nice is that for the last 3 years, we have really felt that we've made some progress with the work that we've been doing, especially with our academic consistencies throughout our teaching program. And we just haven't been able to show that overall academically as well as we'd like to. And this year, it did come out that way for us. And as much as we are proud of the overall results of the SBA, over here, if you look at our internal goals that we made, I think we're more proud of those, especially ones like at least 25% of our level 1 students go to 2. That was key. And that, if you looked at what that test is like, the student that's scoring at level 1, you know, move to a 2, is significant for a couple of reasons. First, it's just, I think those are the learners that we're trying to work with the most to get them to buy into education. And, you know, it's not always because they can't. It's a lot of times because they're struggling in some other way, and we're trying to find ways to meet their needs. We feel like we're trying, we're kind of breaking through that a little bit. We'll see if that happens again this year. But the state is also moving to level 2 becoming a passive score for the SBA. So getting to that level two for students is going to be a bigger deal. The other thing that kind of backed that up was in our internal test results with our MAP scores. We had a goal of at least 50% of our underperforming, and we measured underperforming by those that were scoring two or less on the SBA to meet their MAP growth goal. And we had 60% MAP and 53% ELA meet their MAP growth goal, which was, again, another indication that I think some of the intervention work that we're doing with the academic side is going well. We didn't meet our 100% goal. That was pretty lofty, but we are pretty much 72% met their MAP growth goal. That's pretty huge. And then we got to work on reading. And so what these areas have driven for us is this year, we're pretty much staying with the working with our underperforming students as our target, but with all of our students overall, trying to get all students to grow. But we've now made some intentional classes that we've had CAS, complementary support classes in the past. We're now moving that up to some intervention classes, we call that happen at different times during the day. So we're able to target some sixth graders in reading that we've never been able to access before. Our reading score, our ELA score was fairly low in ELA. It was the one that was below the state level last year. So we're hoping that catching those students a little bit earlier will help out. We've noticed over the past years that our sixth grade scores typically have dropped a little bit as they get in. I think it's part of that transition. But the other exciting thing that we've seen is, although our scores may not be where we want them to be, we have some cohort growth overall for the past 3 years. So if you look at CLA, for example, started at 65, that in blue up there, sixth graders at 20.3. It dropped a little bit, but they ended up last year passing at a 74% range. And that was with some intentional work on our school overall. And the same thing happened with math. Math was growing overall. If you look not only in the blue, but if you look back 1 year, it was close to that overall cohort growth. So between 40 down to 37. So we're hanging in there. But when we look forward, we've been able to do that with both our 8th grade cohort last year and our 7th grade. So we hope we're moving in the right direction. We'll see what that looks like. We're excited about the idea of these intervention classes because we've never had that opportunity before. And we're thinking that that focus and reading will then project out to the other academic field. For our second goal, with the culture in our school, we've traditionally done our survey with students overall. We started, if you look back, the first results I had up there from the fall, we thought maybe we were getting some skewed results because students are typically a little bit happier in the fall than they are later in the year. So we also then went to the spring, and the spring we thought maybe it skewed the other way, because by the time spring rolls around, students may be a little bit not as energizing and active in school, so we thought moving into the winter would give us a little bit better overall look of what they really are truly feeling about school. And so our goal was very lofty. Again, we wanted to have all of our question areas that we asked. We essentially had a total of about 15, 16 areas. We had five that met our goal, and that was reaching a 75% rate. We had another six or seven that were right around 60%. So we feel again that we're moving pretty well in the cultural direction in our school. The two that we deserve, the three data points that we looked at up there, the two that are on the top really are related to relationships, I think, with adults. And then the one that I feel safe at school, we felt that was pretty important. The area again that we're still struggling in is this bottom one, but we just see the peer to peer relationship that we're having some trouble. And again, that's pretty typical for middle school. It's nothing new. Middle school is going through a lot of different things. And so us trying to help them navigate that area is pretty important. So we're trying to focus a lot more in that area this year. And we're doing that by building in some extra programs. We're hoping that the balance between that improvement in academics will also help students feel a little bit better about coming to school. Sometimes we feel these two things work pretty well together. The second part of this goal, again, about coming to to school and feel good about school, we hope it'd be with attendance. And our attendance rate was a little bit lower, but still wasn't bad. And what that means is, you know, our highest was at 92% since I've been working at the middle school. We wanted to try to get back to that. What 86% means is that on any given day, an average of 86% of our kids will be in school. And that includes excused, unexcused, all types of absences. That's still a pretty good attendance rate. And that was important for our staff to focus on and look at because, as you know, in a small school, when we do have an activity that takes students out of school or traveling, it just it feels, I think, like we have a lot more attendance issues than we really do. But we have enough that we want to focus on, but it's not something that I think is as large as what it feels like. So that will help us this year work in that attendance area, but then it will put it closer.
I just have one. On the last question about treating each other with respect,
yes,
it's pretty consistent the first 2 years, just in terms of change year over year with the other questions. But this last one is a pretty big jump. Do you have any theories? Like, and what are you guys thinking about?
I don't know. I mean, I think, of course, I think in a small school, some of that is cohort driven.
You think
so? Although they did well academically, didn't treat each other very well socially.
Okay.
Which is kind of unique if those two things don't go so well together. But we'll see. Now, if that happens again this year, then I think, we'll have
something to watch.
Okay. What's interesting about that is, like, office referrals and all those things that you might think about would be also, those were all down last year. So it's just,
despite
that. So it's just kid to kid thing going on.
We're trying to look at. Okay. That's a great question. They've been doing some really great things, like purposely partnering up kids with different groups within the school to get to know students and working in projects together, walking talk together, and it's just really special.
So those are some of the, I didn't know going. So those are the additional programs we've added. We built on. We did that last year. We're doing it again. Mara did a great job. We started our year off with a full day of students, pretty much mixing and matching. We didn't let them go with their friends. We tried to get them out of their comfort zone a little bit more with each other. But and that maybe that's what they had to work with each other. They didn't like that so well. But we found some. The other thing we started this year, one of our teachers had a little bit. You know, it's a great idea. We have always had trouble tracking attendance because it's sometimes inequitable. The fact that an excused absence can happen for a lot of reasons. So we didn't know how to always keep track of that. We used to do what we call the golden ticket. And the big thing that kept kids from getting their golden ticket was their attendance. And some kids would get an excused absence, but others wouldn't. Or we would count this one. It's hard to tell, you know, if I go to the mainland for a doctor's appointment, is that as valid as going to the mainland to get a dress for the next dance, you know, so we had, you know, an excused absence right now, which is what they're used. So what we have is an attendance program where the kids get a day counted for them if they're at school. So as long as they're at school, or if they're out of school for just a school activity, so if they go on a volleyball match or a field trip, they get to count that day. But we have incentives built in so that once they accumulate 15 days or 30 days, they'll get some kind of incentive award for them. So we're trying to get them to notice what their attendance is doing overall. And that helps with that team. Yeah.
Good prep for high school. Thanks, Rod.
Yeah, it did.
Oh, that's it. Okay. My screen simplified. We just like to look at the numbers. So for our state test analysis, over here you can see how this is only 10th grade students, so sometimes kids will take the test in 11th grade if they were in state when they were in 10th grade, or
Like this year, we have plenty of kids take it because they came from Springsteen and never took the state test, even though we live in the state of Washington. So it's measuring 10th graders next to 10th graders. And so you can see that over time, 18, 19, there's not a score for 19, 20 because that was the COVID spring. We didn't take those tests then. 21, 22, 22, 23, 23, 24, and 24, 25. So you can kind of see how that goes over time, and then the state average from 24, 25 to over here also. So these are our 10th graders. They're class of 2027. And they didn't have the strongest year in testing. But if we, Diana, can we go back to that cohort slide?
Yes.
And you'll have to go out of the slideshow again, but I think one of the interesting things to look at on that cohort slide is if we go to the class of 2027. Oh, yeah. Notice how these are pre-COVID numbers, and then there's COVID, and then ever since then, we've been struggling to recover. Most of our other cohorts have recovered, but this one is hanging on, and it's interesting. My own child is in that cohort. They missed the end of fifth grade and part of sixth grade, and it was a really hard developmental time. There were lots of academic skills that get built during this time, and so we believe in these kids, but it, for whatever reason, has taken a lot. It's been a lot harder for them to recover. And then, of course, now they're 11th graders this year. The other thing that is just kind of the nature of the test is that it's built on the graduation standards are built on 3 years of math. So they test on the standards that are for getting through three years of high school math, but they take it when they're in their second year of high school math. So a lot of times that's why our math scores are much lower. It's just the amount of kids that take Algebra 1 in the middle school, basically, so they get into Algebra 2 by the time they're in 10th grade, and that is not necessarily what happens. And so that sometimes, so by the time they finish Integrated 3 or Algebra 2 in our school, that's usually not an issue anymore. And then Diana, if you could go up to the class of 2026 or down, whichever direction that is. These were juniors last spring, and now they're seniors this year. Melanie's son is in that class. But like, look at these science numbers over here. They're just remarkable. And then now I'd like to go back to the PowerPoint because in the PowerPoint, you can see you can see how in science the state average was 37, and these graduating seniors this year passed that at a 75% level. So it's a testament to our science programs here, the support of the community. So these are just the numbers, and then I hope you had a chance to look at all that data over there. What that means, and then, okay, I'm going to go into goal two, and then I'll talk about what it means. So in goal two, we do the climate survey every year also at the beginning and at the end. So we can compare from the beginning to the end of the year, but we can also compare year to year. So we wanted last year to increase the favorable responses from 84 to 90% on the question, if I have a problem at school, there's at least one adult from school that I can talk to, kind of what Rod was talking about too, that we know that if we're creating a strong relationship with an adult at school, that we're, you know, kids are more likely to do well. So we basically didn't move on that one, but it's still really high. I mean, so we're proud of that, and we will continue to keep working on that one. And then this one, most students at my school treat each other well, same thing that Rod was also looking at. Basically did not really move the needle on that one either. Kind of what Rob was saying too, time of year, you know, you give it in September, we just gave it right now. They're excited. They're super happy to be here. We just had the club fair. They have, you know, 30 opportunities to join a club. And then by the time we give it in May, it's just, it's a late in the year, and they've lost some of that steam and that stamina and that excitement. So looking forward into this year, I think our staff is really excited about the Institute this summer and a lot of that collective efficacy work. And so like we're already trying, we're trying to like easy strategies to work together on. One of the things that is hard in a small school is that like I don't have four teachers that teach Algebra 1. So they can't all talk about like, here's this, let's try this strategy and let's try it out and see how it works and then compare the data. Well, you have teachers that all teach, nobody teaches the same thing. There's not a single teacher here that teaches the same thing as someone else. Then you start finding other things that you can do to increase your collective efficacy. So we're looking at even some of the classroom strategies that we're using. ML students remain a focus for us who are developing language. We, this year, have an ML math class. So up until this point, they've been in all of our other like Algebra 1 classes, and we have enough of them now that it made sense to pull them apart. And so our math teacher, Ms. Turnbow, is teaching many levels in one class period, but they're just together in there and feel, you know, I think they can speak in Spanish when they're in the classroom and ask questions and not worry that they're talking over another teacher or other kids are going to get distracted by their, you know, when they're just trying to figure it out together. So anyway, so that's been a fun thing we're doing this year. I know we're presenting our SIPs for this year at a new meeting, but anyway, those are just some of the data points from last year and how we're looking at moving forward. Awesome. Question.
Okay. Thank you, Andrea. Thank
you. Okay. You can just move it forward for me. Move it one.
Oh, that's right.
I did want to reemphasize something that Rod had said, is that when we start talking about growth, we're going to have I haven't validated that they're actually going to move it to level 2 next year on that smarter balance. But if they do, it's going to, you're going to see these increases in proficiency scores by dramatically, and so we're going to have to try to break that down for you, showing what that actually means next spring. But it does look like 2 is going to become a pass or not level 3. I can talk about the reasons next month. GBS is a little bit weird because we don't have students that take the smarter balance. We don't have them, we don't take the math test, maybe a couple of them if we're trying to do something specific. And so our goals are a lot different, and we don't see them all day long either. Some of them we don't see in person at all. We see them in a remote fashion, as you know. But we have three types of students, and there's the hybrid students, the site-based students, and the totally remote students. And the hybrid students who take some classes with us and also take classes in another, mostly at the high school, middle school here, but some take it somewhere else as well. We've had a hard time of getting at the end of the year a proficiency score where they met all their requirements at 100%. And if, you know, our biggest goal was to target that group, and we went down by 1%. We didn't make any movement. Now you got to see that the top graph up there shows you the number of students we're talking about. This is not a huge sample size, so the percentage can go down pretty fast. So you can see a huge group that were doing extremely well, and then you have a few down at the bottom. I think I'm missing 2 little yellow marks on that top graph. I think we have 2 more students there. But when you go to the bottom one, which talks about, it's a graph that shows, we also want to get all our students there to be on track. A lot of times when they show up, they're behind in a graduating in a timely manner. They're behind in credits. So maybe they should have 6.5 credits when they walk in as a sophomore, and they're coming into Griffin Bay with 2.7 or whatever. And so we want to try to get them caught up and be on track. That's hard to do because we get new students all the time every year. But I want to point out the yellow on this one. The yellow on the bottom and the yellow on the top are the interesting thing is they're both the same group. And so as we started to disaggregate, we realized that our focus group is our juniors this year. That was an interesting thing. I didn't. Yeah, it's the same class, same issues. And so we're trying to determine what we're going to do. Our goal, you know, we're going to come back with working with our hybrid students more than the other two groups. But instead of some of the the strategies we may have used last year, we're going to try to focus on that junior group. And be honest with you, you'll hear a lot about what we're doing to try to minimize distractions, because they get distracted very easy and off track. Go ahead and move to the next one. The other two, again, you know, we didn't meet our goals. We wanted 100% graduation rate, but realized when we got 77% instead of 100%, it was equal to, I don't know if it's two or three students that didn't make it. And of those three, they moved to Open Doors or came back for a fifth year. So we didn't lose them. They just didn't graduate in that time and manner. So, but the state will see the 77%. Again, if you go back over the years, we were at 30% even before COVID. Yeah. So having 3 years in a row where we've been 77% or higher has been really good. And attendance is, you know, always an issue. And I've actually listened to Rod talk. We haven't started it yet, but listen to some of the ideas that school has. We're trying to figure out if we should do that as well to increase attendance. Believe it or not, as you see on the chart up there, the group that has the lowest attendance rate is the same group that we are struggling with as far as proficiencies and on-track status. And so that again, is going to continue to be a focus of ours. And I'm only going to say one other thing. It's not up there. We have never done a climate survey. Well, we actually tried. We just didn't get enough to take it. Because, again, we have no student that stays in Griffin Bay all day long. No one is an all-day student in Griffin Bay. But we're going to force it. Because anecdotally, we feel like they enjoy what's going on in school. They feel good about coming to school, to the school. They're very open with us about anything and everything, sometimes too open. But I'd like to get some numbers on it. And we want to see if those numbers, and by cohort, we want to see if those numbers change between, you know, this year's juniors and the others that come in. And so, you know, the bad thing is what I'm reporting is that we didn't make any of our goals. I mean, that's the truth. We didn't miss it by much, but we didn't make our goals. But we learned a little bit about the reason why, too.
But it's also based on basically one or two kids, because the whole thing is so small.
Right. The attendance is a little bit different. I mean, we ended up with, there were 75, but seven of those were Open Doors. So that really didn't count. So 68 students that were Griffin Bay only that attendance based on. It's not the students that come from the other schools to take an online course. Those are Griffin Bay students. So it's not a lot, but it's more than it was a few years ago when we were at 30. I mean, we started this year with 64 students that are Griffin Bay only students. And it usually grows during the course of the year. But we know that attendance, even if they're only coming in for 2 hours a day and then they go to a job or whatever the reason why they're there for not a whole day, attendance makes a difference. And including remote students, we know when they log on and they communicate with one of the three teachers we have over there, they do better. And the ones that say, I'm just going to do this all myself, except for one time a week I'll meet with you, they often are behind. So we are trying to figure out, especially with our remote students, how to get them more in two-way communication with our teachers.
You said there's 64 kids this year total?
That are Griffin Bay. When I say only, they can be a hybrid or remote or site-based, but their default graduation school will be Griffin Bay School.
Okay. Yeah. And how many class 2026 are there? So just thinking about that graduation rate goal for this next year.
I think we were sitting at 12, if I remember right, to start with.
Okay.
So again, you know, it doesn't take much.
Take one out of that.
So it's tough to get that. But the state held us hostage for a few years on the same thing that Holly was talking about. We had to have a graduation rate goal because they said our graduation rate was too low. Pretty hard when you have seven graduates to have one person knock you down quite a ways. And that's all I have.
Okay.
Have any questions?
Anybody? Okay, thanks, Brad. Moving on to the consent agenda. First, we want to acknowledge and accept with gratitude gifts, contracts, and donations from United Way for PIP for $1,000,
switch vehicles, and I have no idea what WITA and Orcas trips are, but that was $1,600. The Stalker Foundation for Early Learning, $43,000, and NWESD for School Nurse Corps, $28,000, for a total of gifts, donations, and contracts for over $75,000. So we're pretty lucky. And the rest of the consent agenda is for standard monthly expenses, personnel changes, and board meeting minutes. Could I have a motion to approve the consent agenda?
Make a motion to approve.
I second.
Okay, Brian moved. Melanie seconded. Any discussion on it? All in favor?
Yes.
Okay.
Can I say one thing, yes. Board members, I would ask if you could, at any time that you're talking to anybody, please tout the importance of the Stalker Foundation. I mean, they have done so much for us in this school the last 3 years, and we're again asking them for some more money to support Early Learning Center. But anytime you can tell anybody and everybody how great Stalker Foundation, because it is based on people who live here. That donation goes to communities where family members live. So it's a very limited donation across the country, and they have supported us, and I just want to make sure everybody knows how appreciative we are of what they're doing. It really makes early learning possible in a lot of ways. So even $43,000 less at ELC would hurt us.
So I know the donors are the individual Stalker Foundation, and I believe our school district gets more money than most other school districts that they reward.
And that's why they need to be told how great they are, because it really is a pretty amazing thing.
Mm-hmm.
We're very thankful for them.
Can I request that Diana send them a really nice thank you note, Fred?
Mm-hmm. Well, we can ask Diana too, but really I'd probably ask Becky, because Becky's been writing the grants with the Stalker Foundation, and she can go right to Patty, the director, and then she'll pass that on to all the family, but we really should.
Thank you. Moving on, Jose, you're up. Monthly finance report.
Okay, enrollment came in a little bit better than we had projected. The final number after the September enrollment is about 5.25 FTE more than we budgeted. And there's, at this point, we've got a couple of FTE so far this month, so it's a good start to the school year from an enrollment standpoint.
Okay.
Any questions on enrollment? All right. We're in the process of closing out the fiscal year, as I mentioned last month. The final accounts payable run was done just the end of last week. So I will be capturing everything within the next month or so when the F-196 year-end report is due to the state. And these numbers will change primarily in the capital project spend, as we have a couple of big projects that were completed in the month of August. Moving on to where we are in 24-25, you can see the number at the bottom. The delta between revenues and expenditures is a deficit of almost $930,000. As I just mentioned, I'm working on the F-186. I was working on it during this board meeting while paying close attention to everything else. And that delta has closed by $400,000. There's still a few accruals left to do with the final billing of the federal grants next month. And then the last big item remaining is the transfer from the capital project fund for expenditures and the general fund for ongoing technology and capital projects payroll. At this point, it does appear that we will meet our goal of last year, was at the budget of $22,000 in the black. So that's a good thing.
So we'll clarify. So red is where we are, and the black is what we predicted, and we're going to end up at our prediction.
Yes.
Your belief is. Yeah.
Yes. Well, I've got a couple of other things to do. I'm working on that part of the Earth 196 now, what we will transfer from the Capital Projects Fund. I do have a meeting tomorrow with ECAP folks to talk about what they about final billing. And that's, and this is a piece because we coded things to ECAP in the hopes that they would pay, which I think they will. Otherwise, it's a capital expense for what we do with the earlier in the center. And then the final step is looking at everything other than payroll that was coded to the cap to as a transfer to verify that all those are legitimate, that I don't have to, that I didn't miss anything, and that there's nothing in there that shouldn't be in there. So within, at the end of next week, I should have a much better idea of where we're at, other than the final grants going with the October 15th.
So John, it is black.
Yeah.
I know.
It's
pretty impressive. So
it's really cool.
Any other questions?
No, I think so, thank you. Director reports, got anything, Brian?
I have nothing to report.
John?
I just like to thank God for the SIPA person, a lot of work and all that. So thanks for doing it all. It's informative for all of us.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I got to listen to the exceedingly boring General Assembly, Robert's Rules of Order to a T. The General Assembly is the body of WASDA that takes positions and has bylaws and model policies and blah, blah, blah. They send out what they recommend. There were 283 the first time I did it. This year there were 27. It was so much nicer. We were done by 12:15 instead of 2 days. One of the things that was interesting that they, you know, they're all about full funding and emergency funding. And one of the things they brought up was equitable funding for early learning. And that passed because we vote on all these positions that they bring up and they give you a recommendation. One of the ones that did not pass, which was amazing to me. Well, no, it wasn't. One of them that they said do pass was about climate change and that we should be teaching a specific climate change curriculum. And nobody wanted to have curriculum dictated to them by WASDA. So that one failed. They were a little surprised. And then there's access to re-engagement, which is the open doors and kids coming back after they've dropped out or after they're 18. And as it stood before, they could not come back. I mean, they could come to us tomorrow and not be allowed back because they'd have to wait till the whole next year cycle. And so that was one that everybody thought was for the birds. And so that one failed. And they wanted to add all kinds of nonsense to sports like refs and people that volunteer. They wanted to give them unemployment, and even though they were unpaid, you know. And I guess those would be the coaches. They get a stipend. They wanted to give benefits to them, which doesn't make sense. And then also more insurance to refs, and none of those passed. Absolutely none of those passed. So even though some were recommended. Anyway, mostly stabilizing budget, state revenue, pretty much not very many surprises, but they were pretty surprised about the climate change one and the people's arguments against enforcing curriculum were very valid. So that's all I have. So board calendar's up next.
Well,
And if I could just want to remind us that in October there are two different kind of meetings going to happen starting at 4:15. The first one is a special board special meeting board workshop where you guys can take and review your goals. And then before we get into the regular meeting, there'll have to be an executive session for the purpose of reviewing personnel. And then over the meeting. So we're going to start 4:15, and at this point, that meeting would start. Of course, we could have it. Well, we might want to consider having that over in the conference room. Mm-hmm. Because when you guys worked on your goals last time, you had it up on the screen and you could make the changes and then do what you want, and then you have to come and talk about it in an open meeting at 5 p.m.
Okay, so we have to open up the special meeting over here, though, right?
Well, we can open it up there.
Okay.
Special meeting. We can open up a special meeting there.
Okay.
And then
the exec session, too.
You can close that special meeting and go into an exec session at 4:30.
Okay, over there.
Over there.
Okay.
We just would have 10 minutes to get over here at the end of the exec session.
Okay, so the board goals, we did them for 3 years last time, and I've been looking at them. I don't see any major changes that we should do, but I want you all to take a look at them before we meet. And we'll also have them and put them up, but if Diana can find them, I just have a hard copy.
Okay.
So that's what we have. And then WASDA, it looks like John is not going to be there. Melanie is not going to be there. So Brian,
I'm there.
You better be
yep.
there.
Okay. I'll be there.
And I went through the handbook and figured out which ones, well, not the handbook, but the suggested ones, and I figured out which ones I want to go to. There's not, mostly minor on governance rather than anything else. Mm-hmm. I don't know what ones you're interested in. There's a lot of AI.
That's the big thing.
Yep. So, anyway, anything else? Did we go to the order? I call this meeting adjourned at 6:02.
Oh, all right.
Thank you.